RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Stella O'Malley is a psychotherapist, best-selling author, public speaker, parent with extensive experience in counselling and psychotherapy. She is also the founder and executive director of GenSpect, and we've asked Stella back on our program. She's been here before, in this case, to talk about the Association of Psychotherapists Aotearoa New Zealand's new position statement, which includes a rejection of any efforts to help individuals change their sexual orientation or gender identity, describing it as a form of conversion therapy. Stella, welcome to our program. Great to have you back. I hope you're well.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
Okay, all the way from Ireland. And obviously, you've seen some of the material coming out from here. I'm going to ask you about that in just a moment. But just for listeners new to us, could you just quickly describe GenSpect and the mission, just quickly?
Yeah, what we are is we're an international organization. We have a very strong branch in New Zealand, and we advocate for a non-medicalized approach to gender dysphoria. So if somebody wants to wear a dress, or if they want to, you know, wear makeup or do whatever they want to do, they're very welcome to. However, medicalizing their body weakens their body. It causes a huge amount of health complications, and it's not necessary. People can be non-conforming without medicalizing. So that's what we advocate for.
All right, on to APANZA's position, rejecting any efforts to help individuals change their sexual orientation or gender identity. How do you respond to concerns that some individuals might regret transitioning or might want to explore alternative understandings of their gender identity over time? Shouldn't therapy allow that exploration without an automatic assumption that gender identity is fixed? Yeah.
Yeah. APANZA's statement, it's very anti-psychological, because people go to psychological counselling or therapy. They go so that they can change their lives. That's you don't go to maintain the status quo. You genuinely go, you know, to make some sort of change in your life for some reason. So this kind of concept that we won't be involved, we therapists won't be involved in change efforts, is like, well, why would you go to counselling for? What are you actually doing there? So it's like somebody has come in who is so determined to be ideological about this that everything is good. We just have to nod along. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. If you want to have a nod along, nodding dog therapeutic experience, that's something somebody could choose. But don't say that's a psychotherapeutic process. It's not. A psychological process is an actual thing that we get trained for. And when we get trained for it, there's a start and there's a middle and there's an end. And with that, change occurs. Now, I'm not saying that therapists should have this, I'm determined, I'm going to convince the client to do A, B or C. That's not how we do. But we are always open for change. We're always open for thoughtful analysis. We're always open for, let's look at this door. Let's look at that door. Let's look at all the options available. And for APANZA to kind of come out with a statement that, no, you're not allowed to look at any other options other than this is all good. Because that's kind of what their statement is saying. They're saying, you just affirm. You affirm that this is a good thing and all change efforts should be frowned upon. It's like, well, that's not psychological process. It's something different. It's effectively when somebody goes to the Samaritans and they ring up, do you have the Samaritans in
Yeah, my father used to be one.
Yeah. Oh, and so it's a lovely service, and it is the nodding dog. So you go, you might ring them when you're in deep distress, and you might say, I'm feeling really bad, and you'll just get a soft, soothing voice at the other end. They won't give you a psychological process. What they'll give you is just a genuine kindness, and that's all. And it's really good for the dark nights of the soul. But when you go and you pay money and you're expecting an actual well-trained expert in psychological counselling, then you're going for an actual change to occur. So it's and quite apart from the fact, and I'm sure we're about to go into it, it's completely out of date. The latest research is showing that there's an awful lot of detransitioners who are saying, I wish I was challenged. I wish I'd had some in-depth psychological exploratory therapy because it would have benefited me.
Couple of things from what you've just said there. First up, is an affirmation conversion with another name anyway?
Yeah, it's pharmaceutical of a conversion in many ways, because when somebody affirms a client who wants to change their body in all sorts of manners, and don't forget there's people nowadays who are coming in and they might want affirmed. It can be a boy who might want affirmed some things that are not seen in nature, if you follow me. So they can sometimes, they can want some quite extreme body modification because of their identity. It's not just straight, a boy wants to become a girl and a girl wants to become a boy. That day is over. It's all sorts of different variations on that. For example, girls who want non-binary, who decide to have a mastectomy. But when they come in, they're looking to change their body. And an affirmative clinician is nodding along for these pharmaceutical changes to occur. And they give them access and they write the letters and they give them the kind of professional confirmation that change can occur. So that's by its very nature, that's conversion. It is affirming conversion.
They don't seem to be able to understand that, though. They write affirmation and the other side of the brain doesn't register.
We're living in an Alice in Wonderland world where up is down and blue is white. And that the key point about this is these are a lot of these kids are highly autistic or they've got ADHD. They've often got neurodiversity on some level. And they're very often gay or lesbian or bisexual. And very often they don't want to be. So we're talking about, you know, a little girl who's realized that she fancies another girl. She doesn't want to be a lesbian. She just wants to be an ordinary boy. And, you know, there's lots of things I don't want. I didn't, you know, maybe you didn't want to be born of the parents who were born. And maybe you didn't want to be born the way you were born. You know, maybe you wanted to look different. There's lots of things that we have to accept about ourselves in life. And that's the tragedy of life. But it's also the beauty of life because it makes us more complex human beings. And that's what you've got. You've just got your body. You can put in modifications. But to ask therapists not to explore impact of these modifications is very, very retrograde.
Well, it's kind of twisted. I'll get back to the other thing I was going to pick up on, or I'm picking up on now, what you said. And that is you don't go to therapy to maintain the status quo. You go for a change. You'd think that would whack a few people around the face in the business too, that understanding, but that's not there either. Because that questions the total fundamentals of what you're doing.
Well, it's like they don't actually understand what it is. And the idea of people commenting on therapy when they don't seem to know what it is, and they're leading an association on therapy. What is therapy? It's a psychological process where change occurs in the kind of company of somebody who's trained to work with the psyche. It's not something that we just affirm. Affirm is just nodding along. You know, when you go for a coffee with your friend and you've got some deep problem going on and your friend just nods along, yeah, 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 you should do that. And then you say something completely different. Yeah, you should do that too. And you think they haven't really turned up. They're just nodding along. It's actually very deflating and it's a lonely experience. But when your friend completely engages and gets into it and says, well, what would happen if you did this? And what would happen if you did that? What are the pros and cons? Your friend has really turned up and you feel shoulder to shoulder, solidarity, that connection between two humans that is, you know, just so nourishing and powerful. That's good therapy. So, it's actually, it's not giving good therapy to just affirm. It's not enough.
Well, it's risky therapy, if you can even call it therapy, isn't it? Because it could push someone in a direction that they could regret.
Well, it actually does push people in. I run a, for example, therapeutic support group for detransitioners. And these would be people who medically transitioned and then came to realize that they don't like their new life. That, you know, for example, so many of them say, I realized I couldn't really be a man or I couldn't really be a woman. I was only ever going to be a trans man or a trans woman. It's not quite the same. It's like a simulation of a man or a woman. And so that's one reason why a lot of them detransition and they try to go back. But these are people, for example, a woman who might have had a mastectomy. She might have hair in her chest, hair on her face, hair on her back and on her bum, like a complete masculinized voice because of testosterone, male pattern balding. And to try and go back to being a woman is almost impossible. And that's what they're trying to do. It's really harrowing to discuss it with them. And they're furious with the therapy that they
receive. I was going to ask you, what do you hear about what they think of the service that they've had?
I hear really shocking responses where they, and I get it, the anger they have, it would shock you. It would shock you, but it's kind of understandable too, if you follow me, because they think back and they say, I was at my lowest. I was at my most vulnerable. I just had a breakup or I just suffered, you know, the death of a parent. And I went to this therapist all over the place. I was a mess. I was a mess when I went in. And somewhere along the way, I was telling them that transition was going to cure everything. And they didn't say, well, will we look at the impact of the medical complications? Will we look at the impact of not having a child? Some of them were young when they transitioned. They didn't know what it's like to give up their fertility. They're furious and they're distressed and they feel like they were nodded along down the wrong road. And now when they've detransitioned, they're like, the therapist isn't interested. I wrote to him and he didn't reply to me. You know what I mean? So some of them are taking lawsuits, and there will be many, many lawsuits, and there will be in New Zealand and there will be everywhere else. And these lawsuits are going to bring to account, and there will be a day of reckoning where therapists didn't meet the responsibilities when people were weak and vulnerable. And then as well as that, some of them can't even face having lawsuits because they say my life is ruined and I'm devastated by everything. They often see it as going back to the scene of the attack, to going back to the therapist, because they feel like I was attacked. I was at my lowest and I was treated really badly.
The therapists, what age range are we talking about when it comes to, you know, if there are any, you know, different views, different ways working this? Is there an age range that is right into affirmation? Is there an age range, I'm picking of more experienced people who have been in that business for a long time who can see it for what it is? I'm just interested to know.
There's without a doubt, like the over 35s, the over 40s are definitely more inclined to see it in an independent way. I do think it's really noticeable. Therapists who work in clinics tend to kind of suffer from groupthink, while an independent psychotherapist who works on their own and has worked 30, 40 years on their own independently, they're the best because they're not pleasing anybody. They're just working in psychotherapy because that's what their job is. So that's what I would urge anybody to go and see, that the clinics have a groupthink thing. But not only that, it's like the younger generation. They have been taught to believe that being trans is the same as being gay, when it's a world of difference. Because being gay, you don't have to do any medication. You don't have to change your body. You don't have to change anything. You just live your life and fall in love with whoever you want to fall in love with. Being trans requires continuous, constant medication to constantly try and tweak and change the body. And it's a lifetime kind of world of medicalizing your body to look a different way. And it requires a huge amount of effort. And it often brings about an awful lot of medical and health complications.
Okay, so what to do? Because it seems you mentioned groupthink. It's alive and it's well, no doubt about that. At some point, they're probably going to realize that this was a disaster. How far away do you think that point is? Matter of interest?
Well, I'm watching it very carefully, and you can see that in the pioneers of pediatric medical transition have pushed back. They have reversed. So Sweden, Denmark, you know, Norway, Finland, France, these countries have pulled back and gone the other direction. They were the pioneers. They brought in pediatric childhood medical transition earlier than everybody else. And now they are saying only in strict clinical trials will we offer it because it has not gone very well. Those children are, by the way, now in my DTrans support group. So they would have been transitioned at 12 or at 14 before they had any sort of mature ability.
Yeah, it's crazy, man.
When you step back, you realize talking to a 14-year-old, you're going to be infertile. You won't have orgasms. They don't even know what you're talking about, some of them.
Anyone sit there and say those things? And not feel awkward and icky. I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, they don't. And they what they do is they keep on just clinging to the one kind of, you know, pathway, which is I want to be a boy. And I'm just going to say yes to anything. You know what I mean? I did see that the Ministry of Health in New Zealand, they did release a kind of a position statement on puberty blockers in New Zealand.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you about
that. Puberty blockers are really overprescribed in New Zealand more than any other country.
X10, we believe, on anyone else. There you go.
It's unbelievable what's happening in New Zealand, because in Western Europe, people are waking up to the idea that blocking a person's puberty, blocking their sexual awakening. If this child is maybe a pre-gay, maybe pre-lesbian, but they haven't had a sexual awakening yet. And so they know that they fancy people, but they haven't quite, you know, had any sort of sexual feeling. And you block their puberty, so you block their sexual development. So that, for example, a little boy, his penis remains like a little boy's when he's 15, 16, 17. He doesn't get any sexual feelings. How is he going to get in touch with the fact that he was gay all along and that's why he was girlish? How will he actually? It's barbaric. We're going to look back on the puberty blockers experiment, and that's what it is. And it's a very badly run experiment because we don't have a control group to look at and say, well, how did they get on with just leaving them alone and letting them kind of physically grow? And I know that puberty is very difficult for non-conforming children. I was a non-conforming child and puberty was an absolute train wreck for me, absolutely awful. But sometimes, because of the way we're made, we have to go through difficult times. It doesn't mean we should avoid those times. Sometimes by avoiding the pain, we are actually just poisoning the future. Sometimes we have to have some sort of reckoning with our body. Our body is changing. You get a sexual awakening. You start to wish to pair bond. You fall in love. You start to fall in love with yourself as a result. And then your sexual life begins. You stop puberty on a child. They'll have none of that. And they remain shy-like because they're completely self-absorbed because they have no sexual awakening. No desire to fall in love, no desire to pair bond. And we see it with Daz Jennings over in America. She's not falling in love. She's not fancying people. She's just they go from puberty blockers to a chemical, you know, puberty of the opposite sex. So it's a kind of it's a very chemicalized life.
Speaking more on the advice from our Ministry of Health on puberty blockers, one thing that really stood out there was obviously GPs have been kind of let off the hook. They don't have to be sort of doing this sort of work anymore if they don't want to. And the recommendation is to put it more in the hands of the people, you know, whose core business it is. But they're the affirmation people. So it's kind of worse than it was. They're doubling down on worse, right?
That's a really good point you raise. And if anybody's listening and if they are a psychotherapist or a psychologist and they're kind of biting their lip knowing they know what I'm talking about, please consider seeing gender non-conforming children. Please consider seeing gender questioning adolescents. Because what it is people are frightened. Psychologists and psychotherapists are frightened to work in this field. And so what they're doing is leaving it to affirmation zealots. These are people who work in clinics who believe it's like a new form of being gay, even though there's gay animals found in nature. You can actually empirically test whether somebody's gay. The very testable, it's a real thing. While being trans is a subjective feeling in your mind that nobody can actually test. So if you said right this second that you identify as a woman, then you're a woman because it's completely subjective and it's in your mind. And when something is subjective and in your mind, you can work on your mind or you can work on your body. That's your choice. And so like any psychologist who's listening and who hasn't entered this world, I really plead with you to please enter it because we need good, conventional, traditional, psychological experts who are working in this field.
Just thinking, as you're talking there, we're into gender affirmation and fluid genders and right up to surgeries and everything. But isn't that really ultimately an extension of just self-harm? That's been around for a while. It seems to me there seem to be commonalities, I don't know, it's just observational in a general sense, between maybe particularly girls of a certain age who could be susceptible to self-harm, have sort of kind of transferred that to a super self-harm, which ends up with mastectomies and crikey God knows what. Is there some kind of link there?
You might think, you know, when you trace it back, you know, like the era of the teenager really arrived in full swing in the 1950s and 1960s. And a lot of girls were sexualized at a very young age from then on. You know, there was all these rock and roll songs, which came out with some crazy stuff like You're 16 and all the crew. It was really
I know, there were a few dodgy ones, right? When you think about the age. Into the Night's another one.
Good morning, little schoolgirl. And stuff. Yeah. So there was. And those girls, it's kind of interesting. From there, you can have a golden thread and you say girls started to flee from their sexual development. It began with anorexia, the late 60s, they started getting reports, then in the 70s. And there was a real social contagion among girls. If you met somebody with anorexia, you were more likely to get anorexia. And it just it took over the world, anorexia, and it stayed. It's still an issue. Then from anorexia, we moved into bulimia. And by the 80s, there was bulimia. This is people who are vomiting. went in through into the 90s. So there was still anorexia, but girls were now finding a new way to reject their body, which is through vomiting, and that was bulimia. And then it went in from the 90s and noughties into self-harming. Again, a new way to hate your body, a new way to reject your body. Again, started by girls, socially contagious through girls, and went like wildfire and has remained. Anorexia, bulimia, self-harm, these are all different ways. And they've remained as coping mechanisms for girls to hate their bodies. It then moves into the boys, and the boys do get it, but in lesser numbers. And now gender dysphoria, a new way to hate your body, a new way to reject your body.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah. To actually, for example, to literally remove your breasts. Actually, it's a war on breasts. It's literally removing your breasts with clinical surgery. And it's reducing all your sexual characteristics, getting rid of them. So, yeah, I do think it's extreme body modification. And I think it's a form of self-loathing. And I think there's lots of ways to be non-conforming. You can wear whatever you want, do whatever you want, but don't hurt your body. Please don't hurt your body, because you've only one body.
As far as we know, could have another life going on that we're unaware of.
Well, can we talk about therians or furries for a moment? Because
say again, Stella. I missed that.
Can we talk about therians and furries? Because they've come in like wildfire.
Oh, these are the animal.
Everybody thinks they're furry harmless, but these are girls mostly, but some boys who identify as an animal. And they believe that that's who their spirit is. And according to the new, you know, policy guidelines by APAC.
Affirm it, do you?
Yeah.
Well, you give them a bowl of milk.
Yeah, well, if a boy came in to me and he's 14 years old and he says, I'm really a dragon. Well, according to these policy guidelines, you'd have to affirm that and say, well, okay, you're a dragon. I believe you're, not only do you think you're a dragon, I, the therapist, have to believe.
Oh, no.
Even further, like it goes further. Or I am a fox, or, you know, some spirit animal. And there's all sorts. It's really quite developed. People think it's very funny and sweet, but actually they are getting kind of body kind of surgery around this. And it's, to me, it's a form of self-rejection. It's like, yeah, you can identify with animals. But furries is another one where you wear a fursuit. And like, there's an awful lot of kind of pretty degenerate sex around this. So when the kid is very innocently being a furry and looking up furry online stuff, right beside it, there is real kind of pretty degenerate stuff is going on at the very same time. So if you are a parent and you're listening, please look it up. If that's your kid's thing, look it up so you know what you're talking about. Don't look away. Don't pretend it's just all funny and it's just the four kids that you know. It's not. It's quite big online. And there's an awful lot of predatory people who are coming on and finding these vulnerable kids in these communities. And those predatory men have always been there. There's always been different ways to get them. Right now, the predatory men are online and they're on those communities and they're pretending to be something that they aren't.
Incredible. Okay, so yeah, parent or grandparent listening right now might be dealing with an issue like this. I'm tempted after, well, not just hearing you, but all along sort of following this, I wouldn't let my kid, even if they're having extreme problems, yeah, I'd deal with them. Actually, I'd deal with it because I'm the parent. I got the responsibility for it. And I think I'm smart enough to deal with it. Others might not have that confidence, and I could be wrong, but I wouldn't let them go anywhere near any of this. I would try and unwind it, inform myself and unwind it, you know, within the family.
Yeah, well,
is that the thing to do?
Well, I'm a great believer in parental authority. I do think that, like, you know, every parent is the world authority on their kid. They're the world expert in their kid. And the last couple of decades, I've written a few books on this. It started with Cotton Wool Kids, and my most recent book is When Kids Say They're Trans. And there has been a very definitive dismantling of parental authority. So a lot of parents don't have confidence that they used to have. There used to be this concept, mother knows best, and whatever the mother thought, you bought into it.
And wait till your father comes home. I used to hear that one a lot.
Yeah, that was another one. And like some people would say this was a terrible era because actually we should have been listening to experts, but the experts haven't covered themselves in glory. The experts don't have some sort of special knowledge that other people have. And parents generally, not always, there's always going to be bad exceptions, but generally parents love their kids more than anybody else. Generally parents are willing to give more time and effort and engagement than anybody else. And generally the parents are there to pick up the pieces. And that's what all those detransitioners I work with often say. You know, I fought with my parents at the time. They didn't affirm me, but the therapist affirmed me. But who's here to pick up the pieces? My parents are. not the
who's
therapist.
The last line of defense morally? Parents.
Yeah, I would be, I've got two kids, I've got two teenagers myself, and I would be reluctant to send my kids to therapy, and I'm a therapist, unless I really felt hugely out of my depth. It would have to be something really quite extreme, and I'd be very tentative, and I'd do it very, very carefully. Because when you bring in another adult into your child's life, you're creating a triangulation, and it's very easy for it to become like the drama triangle, where the child is the victim, the therapist is the savior, and the parent is the oppressor. You have to be very careful of splitting your family up and bringing another adult in who is considered wiser than you. I'm a great believer in therapy, but at the right time, in the right way, and at the right place, not just willy-nilly, they're feeling a bit down. You are the expert of your kid. Don't give it away. You know?
And to finish up, therapists need to approach with what? The utmost scrutiny. Always, do they?
All I ask of therapists is to bring your training with you. You trained in psychological process. Have respect for the process. Have respect for your job as a therapist. Have kind of respect for your ability to kind of work with the psyche. And that is, you engage. You engage completely in what's going on. There's a great line in therapy. What's going on? Now, what's really going on? Start off with what's going on, and then you figure out what's really going on. And that takes time and takes patience. And you do a lot more than nod along. You give respect to the person in front of you.
Could I end on the cynical note? It's never been so good for earning for this particular part of the medical establishment. They've got a conveyor belt of earning potentially here. Who would want to get in the way of that? Keep on coming back.
I think you're right. And I feel like a priest who's lost his faith, because I feel really, I only met a therapist today and we had a good old gossip about how awful therapists are. I think we are in a bad era for therapy. I think there's a lot of bad therapists. There's a great book that I'd really recommend, which is called Bad Therapy by Abigail Schreier. And she's talking about the therapeutic culture and how many really not great therapists have just joined in because they think it's kind of easy money and they think it's just about nodding along. And it's not. It's about getting in the trenches with the person. And it's an actually very absorbing and exhausting work. And it's unfortunately, it's been infiltrated by people who don't seem to be very deep.
Got a feeling it might not run for too much longer.
Yeah.
The wheels are kind of falling off, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think even if you look over and look at across the world at the political context, people are voting in the anti-woke brigade now. They're sick of this kind of polished corporate nodding along. Anything goes. Kids can be animals, whatever you're having yourself. People are sick of it because there's a certain level of common sense in most humans, especially when you've had children. And you know your kid and you're thinking they're just upset and lonely and they're online too much. And that's probably what's wrong with them.
And give it a bit of time.
Yeah. Let them fall in love, you know.
Let them do that.
Yeah.
All right. Great to have you back on our program. Stella O'Malley, founder and executive director of GenSpect, psychotherapist, best-selling author. It goes on. Really good to chat with you again. Always interesting. Thank you.
Thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.